Hello, this is Ed Reedy from the Talking Information Center with the Wednesday, April 8th reading of Newsweek magazine. What we know about the operation that rescued the missing U.S. airmen. By Steve Malman. A missing U.S. airman was rescued from inside Iran on Saturday after a high-risk operation carried out deep behind enemy lines, following the downing of an American F-15E Strike Eagle during the ongoing Iran war. President Donald Trump confirmed the rescue early Sunday in posts on Truth Social writing, "We got him," and describing the mission as one of the most daring search and rescue operations in U.S. history. How the airmen survived. Trump said the airmen, a weapons system officer, spent more than 24 hours evading capture in Iran's mountainous terrain. In his post, Trump wrote the officer was behind enemy lines in the treacherous mountains of Iran, being hunted down by our enemies who were getting closer and closer by the hour. Details that later emerged showed how the airman remained hidden, according to Reuters. He concealed himself inside a narrow mountain crevice after ejecting from the aircraft. The terrain provided natural cover and made him difficult to detect as Iranian forces searched the area and urged civilians to help locate him for a bounty. Trump said the airman was injured during the ejection but remained alive and mobile while waiting rescue. Like other U.S. aircraft flying over hostile territory, the airman carried an emergency beacon as part of his survival equipment. The device transmitted a signal indicating his location, but the signal itself raised concerns. Fox News correspondent Trey Yingst reported on X there was concern that despite the beacon signal, it was an Iranian trap. That concern meant the signal could not be acted on immediately without further verification. How the location was confirmed. Before authorizing a rescue, U.S. intelligence worked to confirm the beacon signal was genuine and that it was coming from the missing crew member, not being manipulated by Iranian forces. Once that verification was complete, senior U.S. leaders approved the extraction. The response then moved rapidly, with aircraft launched within hours and forces inserted into Iran shortly afterward. How drones helped protect the airmen. Reuters reported that surveillance drones were used to monitor the area around the crevice where the airman was hiding and to track the movement of Iranian forces nearby. The drones provided continuous overwatch, allowing commanders to see when hostile units were approaching and assess threats in real time. According to that reporting, drones and other air assets were used defensively to keep Iranian forces from reaching the site as the rescue window narrowed. The deception campaign. Reuters also reported the operation included a deception effort designed to confuse Iranian search teams. According to a U.S. administration official quoted by the outlet, false signals were circulated suggesting the airman had already been recovered and was being moved elsewhere. The aim was to divert attention away from the airman's actual hiding place long enough for rescue forces to move in. The rescue operation. Trump said the extraction involved dozens of aircraft, including helicopters, fixed-wing planes, and unmanned systems. As U.S. forces moved toward the site, Reuters reported, Iranian units attempted to reach the area. According to that account, U.S. aircraft struck Iranian convoys and access routes to prevent those forces from closing in, clearing a path for the rescue team. The airman was ultimately extracted from the mountainous region and flown out of Iran for medical treatment. Trump said the airman will be just fine. Reactions and the stakes. The operation also drew reactions from lawmakers. GOP Representative Nancy Mace of South Carolina wrote on X, "The rescue would be a movie one day," calling it an incredible success marked by insane challenges. The ordeal drew attention from GOP Representative Don Bacon of Nebraska, a former Air Force Brigadier General who referenced his survival, evasion, resistance, and escape training and the lasting impact it had in preparing air crews for the realities of capture. I admire our downed airman who successfully put his survival training into action and never gave up, he wrote in X. We never leave one of our own behind. Why the mission mattered. The rescue removed the risk of a U.S. service member being captured inside Iran, a scenario that could have triggered a major prisoner of war crisis as the conflict continues. While many operational details remain classified, the publicly described elements point to several key factors. The airman's ability to remain concealed in harsh terrain, careful verification of his big beacon signal amid fears of deception, persistent drone surveillance, a deception campaign to mislead Iranian forces, and a tightly timed rescue that reached him before those forces could. 9 unanswered questions after U.S. airman rescue in Iran. By Amanda Greenwood and Ellie Cook. The overnight rescue of a stranded U.S. airman from deep inside Iran has been hailed by President Donald Trump as a daring operation and a major military success. But key details about the operation, the elite forces involved, and its wider consequences remain undisclosed. While U.S. officials have confirmed that both crew members from the downed F-15E are alive and that one was injured but is expected to recover, the Pentagon has released few specifics about how the mission unfolded. Questions still swirl about aircraft losses, injuries on all sides, the identity and condition of the rescued weapons systems officer, and whether the operation marks the end or just the beginning of further U.S. military action linked to the incident. How many U.S. aircraft were damaged or destroyed? The Pentagon has not provided a confirmed tally of U.S. aircraft damaged or destroyed during the rescue. And Trump made no reference to this in his string of social media posts discussing the mission on Sunday. Anonymous U.S. defense officials quoted by CNN acknowledged that some U.S. transport aircraft sustained damage, but declined to specify how many or whether any aircraft were lost entirely. Several U.S. media reports indicate U.S. special forces blown up two specialized American transport aircraft on the ground in Iran after what appears in this initial stage to be a technical malfunction. Iranian state media, meanwhile, published images purporting to show the charred remains of American aircraft after its military claimed the U.S. had lost two Black Hawk helicopters and two transport aircraft. Newsweek could not independently verify these photographs. Were any non-U.S. personnel killed or injured? U.S. officials have not said whether Iranian forces or any other non-U.S. personnel were killed or injured during the operation. Was the rescued weapons systems officer armed while evading capture? Some media reports, citing unnamed defense sources, said the weapons system officer was hiding out in a crevice in the Iranian mountains, clutching a pistol. However, the Pentagon has not said whether the airman was armed or whether any weapon was used between the crash and his rescue. What injuries did the airman sustain? Details about the airman's injuries have not been made public. Trump said in one Truth Social post that the second airman had sustained injuries, but he will be just fine, without elaborating. In a later post, he described the airman as seriously wounded. U.S. officials have not clarified whether the injuries were sustained during ejection, while avoiding capture, or during extraction. Where is the airman now? U.S. officials have not disclosed the airman's current location. The Pentagon declined to say whether he remains in the region, has been transferred to a military or civilian medical facility, or has returned to the U.S. CBS reported that the officer was taken to Kuwait for medical treatment. Who are the two airmen involved? The identities of both crew members from the downed F-15E Strike Eagle have not been publicly released, although Trump said the weapons officer rescued overnight held the rank of colonel. Which aircraft were used in the rescue mission? There is no full official accounting of the aircraft involved, but Trump said dozens of aircraft kitted out with what he termed to be the most lethal weapons in the world took part on the operation. The mission was likely to include fighter aircraft, transport planes, intelligence and surveillance platforms, and aerial refueling aircraft, though the Pentagon has so far declined to confirm specific models or numbers. Where did the rescue force operate from? Officials have not confirmed where U.S. forces launched the rescue operation or where they recovered afterwards. The Pentagon declined to say whether U.S. assets operated from bases in the Persian Gulf, Israel, or elsewhere in the region. Is this the last U.S. Special Forces operation linked to the incident? That remains unclear. The White House and Pentagon have not ruled out further operations related to the incident, and the situation remains fluid as U.S.-Iran tensions continue. Trump cabinet urged to invoke 25th Amendment against the president. By Peter Aitken. President Donald Trump's social media post on Easter morning has prompted fresh calls to invoke the 25th Amendment, which only the president's cabinet can do. In a post on Truth Social, the president dropped an F-bomb and wrote, "Praise be to Allah," while making renewed threats against Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz as the Iran war continues. Tuesday will be Power Plant Day and Bridge Day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Open the effing strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah, President Donald J. Trump, he wrote. Senator Chris Murphy, a Connecticut Democrat, urged the cabinet to consider the 25th Amendment, which allows it to remove the president from office under certain conditions, calling the president's post completely, utterly unhinged. If I were in Trump's cabinet, I would spend Easter calling constitutional lawyers about the 25th Amendment, he wrote. He's already killed thousands. He's going to kill thousands more. The thousands likely refers to civilians across the Middle East caught in the crossfire of the war, as well as Iranian military personnel. U.S.-based rights group HRANA reported that 3,531 people have been killed, of which 1,607 have been civilians, and the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies have said at least 1,900 people have been killed and 20,000 injured in the strikes so far, according to Reuters. This is in addition to the 13 U.S. military service members who have died during the war. Newsweek reached out by email on Sunday morning to the White House for comment and context about the president's post. Why it matters. On February 28, the United States and Israel targeted key military targets in Iran and killed Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and other government leaders. Iran responded by launching missiles and drones targeting Israel and several Gulf Arab states that host U.S. armed forces. The Strait of Hormuz, a narrow waterway linking the Persian Gulf to global shipping lanes, is one of the world's most critical choke points for energy supplies. Roughly one-fifth of global oil shipments pass through the strait, and any prolonged disruption could have major consequences for global markets. Despite Trump's warning, the strait is not fully closed to international shipping. Vessels from a range of countries, including China and some European nations, have continued to transit the waterway, often under heightened security measures or with coordination from regional navies. Iranian officials have said that the straits remain open to what they describe as the world, while reserving the right to restrict access for perceived enemies, creating a patchwork system in which passage is uneven rather than completely blocked. Trump's language drew a sharp rebuke from Iranian officials. In a statement posted by Iran's embassy in Thailand, the mission criticized the tone of the president's remarks, saying, "We get it that you're a bloodthirsty empire in decline, but you don't have to show your inferiority by this language. Allah is far greater and all-encompassing to be used by your najis mouth. Go ruin some more enterprise and never come back to global politics." What is the 25th Amendment? The 25th Amendment was drafted by Congress after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963 and ratified by 38 states in 1967. It was instituted to prepare for medical emergencies and incapacitation that could prevent a president from performing normal duties. Section 1 of the amendment states, in case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Section 4 states the vice president can become president whenever they, together with a majority of the cabinet, deem the president unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. The 25th Amendment is widely regarded as a measure of last resort. What to know? Trump and his predecessor, Joe Biden, have regularly faced calls for their cabinets to invoke the 25th Amendment with concerns centering on their physical and mental fitness to serve as president, given their advanced ages. Both men set new records for being the oldest person elected president each time they won their election, and Trump is currently just 2 months from turning 80. Biden was 82 when he left office in 2025. Democrats have called for Section 4 of the 25th Amendment to be called on several occasions since Trump's first term in the White House, including after the U.S. Capitol riot on January 6, 2021. In August, Representative Maxine Waters called for the 25th Amendment against Trump after he removed Lisa Cook from the Federal Reserve's board, saying he stood to upend the U.S. economy. The new calls follow Trump's post on Truth Social. John Harwood, a former White House correspondent for CNN, wrote that the 25th Amendment was written for precisely this situation. Trump cannot think clearly. He cannot function effectively as president. Unfortunately, Republican Party leaders are weak, low-character people, unwilling to even try acting honorably, Harwood wrote, receiving plenty of criticism in the responses to his post as people raised Biden's health concerns. Adam Cochran, a professor at Mesa State College in Colorado, wrote that he would go a step further and argue that failing to invoke the 25th Amendment at this point is a violation of their own oaths to this country. It should be seen as nothing short of criminal negligence, and they should be held fully liable for the death and destruction that stems from this, he added. Patrick Henningsen, founder of the outlet The 21st Century Wire, wrote that Trump posted a satanic rant on Easter and called the post an abomination and disgrace to his office and the country. For the good of the nation and the safety of the world, this failing president needs to be removed from office ASAP, he wrote. If anyone in Washington has any integrity left, they would be working to find a way to remove this rogue actor and his psychotic cabinet before they drag us all into World War III. Their loyalty should be to the country, not the octogenarian, psychopathic reality TV star masquerading as president of the United States. Everyone had the same complaint about the Final Four by Andrew McCarty. The men's NCAA tournament national title game is set after UConn took down Illinois in the first of two Final Four contests on Saturday night before Michigan tied history with the largest margin of victory in a game between number one seeds since seeding began in 1979. The Wolverines also became the first team in NCAA tournament history to score 90-plus points in five straight games in a single tournament when they dropped 91 points in a 91-73 victory. As the games played out, college basketball fans took to social media on Saturday night with the same complaint, and it had nothing to do with the late-night blowout. They weren't too pleased the Final Four contests weren't being broadcast on CBS. I will die on the hill that major sports championships belong on broadcast TV. Put early round leftovers on whatever the hell True TV is. The Final Four belongs on CBS where the entire country can watch, one person pointed out. Why is the Final Four on TBS and True TV? I haven't watched for several years and thought it was still on CBS, questioned another before someone else said, it's being on TBS instead of CBS is a disgrace. All NCAA tournament games are broadcast by CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV, and this year were streamed on HBO Max. The Final Four flips every year between CBS and TBS, with CBS landing the NCAA tournament grand finale on odd years, which explains why the games were on TBS this year. The national title game between Michigan and UConn is set for 8:50 p.m. Eastern Time tip. The game will be broadcast on TBS, True TV, and streamed on HBO Max. Nancy Guthrie update. No direct suspect as case enters third month. By Amanda Greenwood. The disappearance of Arizona woman Nancy Guthrie has entered its third month, with investigators still lacking a direct suspect, according to a source with knowledge of the case who spoke exclusively to News Nation. In an interview conducted by News Nation's senior national correspondent Brian Anton, an individual familiar with the investigation, said law enforcement has yet to place any name on the table as a person of interest, raising renewed questions about how the case was handled in its earliest hours. The source, whose identity was concealed due to fear of professional retaliation, said the investigation suffered from critical missteps almost immediately after Guthrie was reported missing. According to the interview, responders quickly concluded that Guthrie had wandered away from her home, framing the situation as a search and rescue effort rather than treating it as a potential criminal case. The rush to judgment stayed with the investigation, the source said, noting that detectives proceeded under the assumption that Guthrie had simply wandered off. They ran it as a search and rescue issue, opposed to a possible criminal issue. Questions over experience and evidence handling. The source also raised concerns about the level of experience of those initially assigned to the case. According to the interview, first responders included detectives who were not seasoned homicide investigators. The supervisor who initially responded to Guthrie's home had never investigated a homicide before assuming oversight of the unit, the source claimed. That's how you end up with decisions being made by people based on loyalty rather than merit, the source said when questioned about the department's leadership structure. Concerns were also raised about how evidence was collected and preserved. The source pointed out that detectives returned to Guthrie's home multiple times after the initial response, something that in their view indicates that the scene should have been secured differently from the outset. The fact that they had to go back not once but several times tells me they should have handled it differently, the source said. No name on the table. Despite months of investigation, the source told News Nation the case currently has no clear suspect. The people I've talked to that are still in the know tell me there's no direct suspect right now, the source said, adding that there is no name on the table. Asked whether that was surprising, the source said the absence of a suspect aligned with how the case has unfolded. They suggested the circumstances point to either extraordinary luck or a suspect who may have been extremely cunning and capable of avoiding detection. Internal frustration and low morale. The interview also highlighted low morale within the sheriff's office. The source described widespread embarrassment and frustration among the deputies, particularly surrounding public comments made by Sheriff Chris Nanos during the early press conferences. According to the source, every deputy in the union voted in favor of a no-confidence motion against Nanos, a development that has further strained the department. I think everyone is walking on eggshells, they said. The source emphasized that deputies still care deeply about Guthrie and her family, particularly her daughter, NBC's Today Show co-anchor, Savannah Guthrie, stressing that dissatisfaction with leadership does not reflect a lack of concern for the case. Just because we have an incompetent leader, it doesn't mean that we don't care, that we don't want Nancy to be brought home safely, the source said. We are completely with her and her family. Sheriff responds. Anton reported that News Nation reached out to Nanos for comment regarding the allegations raised during the interview, but did not receive a response. As the investigation moves into its third month, questions remain about whether early decisions hampered progress and whether answers still ultimately emerge in the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie. NASA chief says odds are pretty high aliens exist. By Adelia Adiason. NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman said Sunday the chances that humanity will eventually find evidence it is not alone in the universe are pretty high, weighing in on a debate that has drawn comments from two presidents in recent months. Why it matters. The possibility of extraterrestrial life has long captivated the American public. In February, President Donald Trump said he would order the release of government documents related to aliens, extraterrestrial life, and unidentified flying objects, UFOs. No government has ever confirmed the existence of extraterrestrial life, though debate over its possibility continues. What to know? During a Sunday interview with CNN's Jake Tapper on State of the Union, Isaacman was asked directly whether humanity is alone in the universe. I've been to space twice. I didn't encounter any aliens up there yet, Isaacman said. But when you think about it, we got 2 trillion galaxies out there. Who knows how many star systems within each of it? I would say the odds that we will find something at some point to suggest that we are not alone are pretty high. Isaacman added, the search for life is baked into NASA's broader scientific mission. Our job here is to go out and try and unlock the secrets of the universe. And one of those questions is, are we alone? So I would say that it is inherent in every one of our scientific endeavors, he said. The debate over alien life escalated in February when former President Barack Obama said during a podcast interview that aliens are real, though he had not personally seen them and that they are not held at Area 51. The exchange happened during a lightning round portion of host Tyler Cohen's interview, where the journalist prefaced his question by noting the rare opportunity to speak with a president of the United States. Cohen asked directly, are aliens real? Obama's response was immediate and unequivocal. They're real, but I haven't seen them, and they're not being kept in, what is it? Cohen interjected, Area 51? Area 51, Obama confirmed. There is no underground facility unless there's this enormous conspiracy and they hid it from the President of the United States. Obama later walked back the comments on social media, clarifying he saw no evidence of extraterrestrial contact during his presidency. Trump pushed back sharply days later when asked by reporters about Obama's interview. He gave classified information, Trump told Fox News senior White House correspondent Peter Doocy. He's not supposed to be doing that. I don't know if they're real or not. He made a big mistake. Trump subsequently ordered the government to release files on UFOs and aliens. Do most Americans believe in aliens? What polls show? A YouGov poll from September 2024 found a majority of Americans, 53%, believe aliens definitely or probably exist. That poll surveyed 1,135 adults and had a margin of error of plus or minus 3.9 percentage points. A Pew Research Center poll from 2021 found that 65% of Americans believe in intelligent life on other planets, while 34% do not. 51% of Americans believe UFOs spotted by people in the military are either definitely or probably evidence of intelligent life outside of Earth, according to the poll. Scientists have not ruled out the possibility of extraterrestrial life. In September 2025, NASA's Perseverance rover uncovered rocks in an ancient river that scientists believe could hold clues to microscopic life that may have lived on the planet. Still, there has been no conclusive evidence of alien life. What people are saying, President Donald Trump via Truth Social in February said, based on the tremendous interest shown, I will be directing the Secretary of War and other relevant departments and agencies to begin the process of identifying and releasing government files related to alien and extraterrestrial life, unidentified aerial phenomenon, UAP, and unidentified flying objects, UFOs. Vice President J.D. Vance via The Benny Show about his thoughts on aliens. I'm obsessed with this. I've already had a couple of times where I'm like, all right, we're going to Area 51. We're going out to New Mexico. We're going to sort of get to the bottom of this. And then the timing of the trip just didn't work out. But trust me, anybody who's curious about this, I'm more curious than anybody. And I've got 3 years of the very tippy top of the classification. I'm going to get to the bottom of it. Elon Musk discussed aliens during a discussion at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland in January. We have 9,000 satellites up here and not once have had to maneuver around an alien spaceship. I don't know. Bottom line is we need to assume that life and consciousness is extremely rare and it might only be us. If that's the case, then we need to do everything possible to ensure the light of consciousness is not extinguished. Representative Anna Paulina Luna, Florida Republican, to podcaster Joe Rogan in 2025. Based on the photos that I've seen, I'm very confident that there's things out there that have not been created by mankind. What happens next? Trump's directive to release UFO and alien-related government files remains in motion, with no firm public timeline announced. OPEC nations agree to adjust oil production. What to know? By Holly Silverman. With gas prices climbing across much of the world and the Iran war continuing to disrupt global energy flows, the eight countries who are part of the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, met on Sunday to implement a new round of voluntary oil production adjustments, reaffirming their commitment to stabilizing global energy markets. Why it matters. On February 28, the United States and Israel targeted key military targets in Iran and killed Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and other government leaders. Iran responded by launching missiles and drones targeting Israel and several Gulf Arab states that host U.S. armed forces, as well as effectively closing the Strait of Hormuz. The Strait of Hormuz, a narrow waterway linking the Persian Gulf to global shipping lanes, is one of the world's most critical choke points for energy supplies. Roughly one-fifth of global oil shipments pass through the strait, and any prolonged disruption could have major consequences for global markets. The blockade has already driven up oil prices and domestic pump costs, raising fears that alongside disruption to other shipments, this soon could give way to an economy-wide inflation surge. Even modest shifts in OPEC output can influence global prices, supply expectations, and economic planning for both producers and consumers. In a statement issued Sunday, OPEC announced the eight member countries, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Iraq, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Kazakhstan, Algeria, and Oman met virtually to review market conditions and outlooks. They agreed to adjust production by 206,000 barrels per day, drawing from 1.65 million barrels per day voluntary cuts first announced in April 2023. The adjustment will start in May with the option to restore the 1.65 million BPD in part or in full, depending on market conditions. The group emphasized maintaining flexibility, including the ability to increase, pause, or reverse previous voluntary cuts, including the 2.2 million barrels per day announced in November 2023. While the move won't likely decrease gas prices, it should serve as a buffer from ongoing gas prices increases, some experts said, following a similar move announced by OPEC last month. countries reiterated their commitment to full conformity with the Declaration of Cooperation and pledged to compensate for any overproduction since January 2024. The group also highlighted the importance of protecting international maritime routes to ensure uninterrupted energy flows and expressed concern about attacks on energy infrastructure, warning that damage is costly, slow to repair, and destabilizing to global supply. What people are saying, White House spokesperson Kush Desai previously told Newsweek, President Trump has always been clear about temporary disruptions as a result of Operation Epic Fury. While the U.S. military continues making astonishing progress neutralizing the Iranian terror regime, the Trump administration remains focused here on the home front, implementing President Trump's proven economic agenda of deregulation, tax cuts, and energy abundance. This agenda created historic prosperity in President Trump's first term, and it's again raising real wages and securing trillions in investments. After Operation Epic Fury's objectives have been realized and the world is a safer place, America is set to achieve new highs. AAA said in a press release last week, crude oil prices have been surging, surpassing $100 a barrel as the conflict in the Middle East continues and the Strait of Hormuz remains closed. In 2022, gas prices remained elevated from March through August, peaking in June when the national average reached a record $5 a gallon for 1 week. What happens next? OPEC will hold monthly meetings to reassess market conditions, monitor conformity, and review compensation progress. Its next meeting is scheduled for May 3rd, where it will evaluate whether further adjustments or reversals are needed as global demand, geopolitical risks, and supply disruptions evolve. The Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee, JMMC, will continue overseeing compliance, according to the statement from OPEC. Macron slams Trump's NATO attacks amid Iran war tensions. Live updates. French President Emmanuel Macron delivered one of Europe's sharpest public rebukes of President Donald Trump since the Iran war began, accusing him of shifting objectives, weakening NATO, and fueling global instability. His remarks landed as markets reeled from Trump's televised address, which offered no clear path to ending the conflict or reopening the Strait of Hormuz, now under a de facto Iranian blockade. What to know? Macron said Trump's changing positions weaken U.S. credibility and strain NATO. European governments are scrambling to manage the economic fallout of a war they were not consulted on. Britain held a virtual meeting with dozens of nations, excluding the United States, to discuss reopening the Strait of Hormuz. The UN Security Council is preparing to vote on a Bahrain-drafted resolution allowing force to reopen the waterway. Britain will host military planners from about 30 countries next week to discuss securing the strait. Trump threatened to bomb Iran back to the Stone Ages, but offered no exit strategy. Stocks recovered from early losses and oil prices eased slightly after reports of talks between Iran and Oman on monitoring marine traffic. Iranian officials rejected Trump's remarks and vowed not to accept a cycle of war and temporary ceasefires. Iran continues launching missiles and drones with intercepts reported by Israel and UAE forces. Iranian authorities detained human rights lawyer Nazrin Stoti, continuing a pattern of arrests, and death toll continued to rise across Iran, Lebanon, Gulf nations, Israel, and the United States. Murphy says Trump's speech detached from reality, warns U.S. is losing the war. Senator Chris Murphy sharply criticized President Donald Trump's Wednesday night address, arguing the president's assessment of the conflict with Iran bears little resemblance to conditions on the ground. The Connecticut Democrat said the speech was grounded in a reality that only exists in Donald Trump's mind. We are losing this war, Murphy said, warning that the United States cannot eliminate Iran's missile or drone capabilities or dismantle its nuclear program through the current campaign. He added that Iran now projects more power in the region than they did before the war, especially if it succeeds in maintaining permanent control over the Strait of Hormuz. Murphy said the U.S. is spending billions we don't have and losing American lives in a war that is destabilizing the world and making us look feckless, framing the conflict as strategically unsustainable and increasingly dangerous for American interests. Iranian officials condemn strike on Pasteur Institute as health sites hit across conflict. Senior Iranian officials condemned the latest strike on the Pasteur Institute of Iran, calling the attack a grave violation of international humanitarian norms, as images of collapsed buildings and debris circulated widely online. Hossein Kermanpar, a spokesperson for Iran's health ministry, said on X that the strike amounted to a direct assault on the international health security and urged the World Health Organization and the International Committee of the Red Cross to intervene. Ismail Bakay, spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry, described the incident as heartbreaking, cruel, despicable, and utterly outrageous, sharing photos of the destruction. The Pasteur Institute, a century-old research complex employing more than 1,300 people and central to Iran's vaccine and biopharmaceutical development, is among several medical facilities damaged since the war began. Earlier strikes left Tehran's Gandhi Hospital scarred by shrapnel, while Israel has accused Iran of targeting the Weizmann Institute of Science in Rehovot. Israel's military said it was not aware of the strike, and U.S. Central Command did not respond to inquiries. Starmer warns Iran war will affect the future of the United Kingdom. The U.K. leads talks on reopening Strait of Hormuz as Iran's blockade drives global fuel shock. With Iran's de facto blockade of the Strait of Hormuz entering its second month, the United Kingdom is hosting virtual talks with roughly 40 countries to explore strategies for reopening one of the world's most critical energy corridors. The strait typically carries about 20% of global oil and liquefied natural gas shipments from Gulf producers. Iran, whose territorial waters cut through the narrow passage, has blocked commercial traffic since the war began on February 28th. The shutdown has sent global oil prices soaring past $100 per barrel, a roughly 40% spike, forcing several Asian nations to ration fuel and scale back industrial output. The United States is notably absent from the talks. Earlier this week, President Donald Trump said reopening the strait was not America's responsibility, telling European nations to go get your own oil. The UK-led effort marks the most coordinated international attempt yet to address the economic and geopolitical fallout of the blockade, which has rattled global markets and intensified pressure on governments to restore maritime access to the Gulf. Argentina expels Iranian envoy after escalating diplomatic clash. Argentina has expelled Mohsin Soltani Tehrani, Iran's charge d'affaires in Buenos Aires, amid a sharp escalation in tension following the government of President Javier Milei's vocal support for U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran. Tehrani was given 48 hours to leave the country after what Argentina's foreign ministry calls false, offensive, and baseless accusations from Tehran. The move came just 2 days after Argentina formally designated Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organization, a decision aligned with Milei's close ties to President Donald Trump in Israel. Iran's foreign ministry accused Argentina of siding with the aggressors in what it described as a clear violation of international law. Argentina rejected that claim, citing Tehran's persistent refusal to cooperate with the long-running investigation into the 1994 AMIA bombing. the deadliest terrorist attack in the country's history. The car bombing of the Argentine-Israelite Mutual Association killed 85 people and injured more than 300. And India caps jet fuel price increases as auto LPG supply tightens. India announced Thursday it will impose a ceiling on monthly price increases for aviation turbine fuel used in domestic flights, limiting hikes to no more than 25% as carriers struggle with rising operating costs. In a separate statement, the government said private operators were facing growing constraints in securing auto liquefied petroleum gas, LPG, due to procurement challenges. Officials encouraged drivers of dual-fuel auto rickshaws to switch to petrol when possible to ease pressure on LPG supplies. International law experts warn the U.S., Israel, and Iran are violating global norms in expanding the war. More than 100 international law scholars have signed an open letter raising profound concern over what they describe as escalating violations of international law by the United States, Israel, and Iran amid the widening war that began with U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran on February 28th. Published Thursday by Just Security, the letter focuses heavily on the conduct of the United States, arguing that the initial strikes were a clear violation of the United Nations Charter, and that subsequent U.S. military actions and statements by senior officials raise the possibility of breaches of international human rights and humanitarian law. Signatories include prominent legal figures such as Harold Hongju Ko and Beth Van Schaak. Critics in the U.S. have already denounced the war as unlawful, pointing to the absence of authorization from Congress or the U.N. Security Council. The letter warns that the actions of all three governments threaten civilians and risk eroding global legal norms. The experts highlighted one of the deadliest incidents of the conflict, a U.S. missile strike that hit a girls' elementary school in Minab, killing at least 175 people. A preliminary military review found the strike was likely the result of a targeting error during an operation against a nearby Iranian base. The letter said the attack likely violates international humanitarian law and could constitute a war crime if recklessness is proven. The authors also condemned Iran's retaliatory strikes on civilian infrastructure across the region, saying the use of explosive weapons in populated areas was unlawful and endangered civilians far beyond Iran's borders. U.S. officials have offered limited legal justification for the war. President Donald Trump has said the campaign aims to eliminate imminent threats from Iran, while Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has framed the operation as a necessary to remove an existential threat posed by Tehran's nuclear ambitions. Saudi Crown Prince and Putin discuss escalation and maritime risks in phone call. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Russian President Vladimir Putin held a phone call Thursday to discuss rising regional military tensions and growing threats to maritime security, according to the Saudi state news agency. The conversation came as the conflict continues to spill across the Middle East, with shipping through the Strait of Hormuz facing heightened risk amid Iranian actions. The Kremlin said Putin used the call to urge intensified political and diplomatic efforts to end the war. NASA releases new lunar photos as Artemis II passes halfway point. NASA released new lunar photos of Artemis II astronauts pass the halfway point in their moonbound journey by Adila Adiason. The Artemis II crew has crossed the halfway mark on its journey to the moon, with NASA releasing new imagery Saturday morning on X, as the four astronauts prepare for a historic fly-around that will take them farther from Earth than any human has traveled in more than half a century. the purpose of the Artemis II mission. NASA's Artemis II mission is designed as a critical test flight to prove that the agency's new deep space systems can safely carry humans beyond low Earth orbit for the first time in more than five decades. The mission marks the first crewed flight of NASA's Space Launch System rocket and the Ariane spacecraft, with astronauts tasked with testing life support systems, navigation, communications, and manual spacecraft controls during a multi-day journey around the moon, according to NASA. The crew will not land on the lunar surface, but the mission is intended to validate spacecraft performance before astronauts are sent on more complex missions. Artemis II is a key step in NASA's longer-term plan to establish a sustained human presence on the moon and prepare for future missions to Mars. By flying astronauts on a free return trajectory around the moon and back to Earth, NASA's aim to reduce risk for later missions that will involve lunar landings, surface operations, and assembly of infrastructure in orbit. President Donald Trump shared a message Wednesday ahead of the Artemis II mission around the moon, saying, "God bless our incredible astronauts." Artemis II currently targeted for 2027, Artemis III currently targeted for 2027, is planned as a crewed test flight in low Earth orbit. NASA has said the mission is intended to test rendezvous and docking operations between the Orion spacecraft and one or more commercial lunar landers, a critical capability of future moon missions. The first crewed lunar landing under the Artemis program is expected to take place on Artemis IV, scheduled for 2028, following lessons learned from Artemis II and III. NASA says the stepped approach is designed to reduce risk as the agency works toward establishing a sustained human presence on the moon later this decade. What to know? The crew, Commander Reid Wiseman, Pilot Victor Glover, Mission Specialist Christina Koch, and Canadian Space Agency astronaut Jeremy Hansen is set to reach the moon on Monday. During their flyaround, they will photograph the far side of the moon, capturing imagery to be shared with scientists and the public. The crew will not enter lunar orbit. The nearly 10-day mission is scheduled to conclude with a Pacific Ocean splashdown on April 10th. NASA announced the halfway milestone Saturday on X, writing, "Lock in, we're moonbound. Artemis II astronauts are more than halfway to their destination, and preparations for lunar flyby are underway. During their trip around the far side of the moon, they will capture imagery to share with scientists and you too." Saturday's imagery release follows NASA's first batch of downlinked photos on Friday, roughly a day and a half into the mission. Those images, shot by Wiseman, showed a curved slice of Earth framed in one of Orion's windows and a full view of the globe with swirling cloud formations and a glowing green aurora visible over the northern hemisphere. The mission carries several historic firsts. Hansen is the first non-American to fly to the moon. Koch is the first woman, and Glover is the first black astronaut to make the journey. What people are saying, NASA, via X on Saturday, said, "I'm going to keep on dancing on the way to the moon today." On the Artemis II, the Artemis II crew woke up to Pink Pony Club by Chapel Roan. President Donald Trump, via Truth Social on Wednesday, said, "Tonight at 6:24 p.m. Eastern Time, for the first time in over 50 years, America is going back to the moon. Artemis II, among the most powerful rockets ever built, is launching our brave astronauts farther into deep space than any human has ever gone. We are winning in space, on Earth, and everywhere in between, economically, militarily, and now beyond the stars. Nobody comes close. America doesn't just compete, we dominate. And the whole world is watching. God bless our incredible astronauts, God bless NASA, and God bless the greatest nation ever to exist, the United States of America." NASA Artemis via X on Saturday. Not bad for a first day in space. Yesterday, as they became closer to the moon than the Earth, Commander Reed Wiseman and Mission Specialist Jeremy Hansen reflected on the feeling of the translunar injection burn. RISE, the zero-gravity indicator, hung out for the conversation as well. Jared Isaacman, NASA Administrator, via X on Thursday, said, "Our four astronauts aboard Orion said it was a great ride during launch. Artemis II is on its way to the moon. This mission is critical in setting us up for success for our next missions, Artemis III, Artemis IV, and beyond." And that's all the time we have for today. Stay safe, and thank you for listening.